Welcome to the Aussie Villains podcast. Unfortunately, you have to put up with Paul and Spud tonight. Not unfortunately because of you, Spud, but, you know, not a full crew again. We've got injuries like the team, buddy.
Yeah, that's it. Two men down. But we'll make it work, Clive. We'll make it work.
Definitely, we always do. Special shout out to Smithy and Trina, who are from Sydney and Birmingham, respectively. We met them. Tess and I were lucky enough to meet them in Brisbane on Thursday night. So, listeners to the podcast and now lifelong friends. So, did you see any of those photos, Spud, and stuff like that?
I did, mate. That's brilliant. Yeah, so good. Like to catch up with Smithy. He's been such a big contributor to the pod over the last 12 months. It was really good that you got to meet him.
Yeah, really lovely man. Exactly the kind of guy that we see in the posts and stuff. And his lovely partner Trina actually kept it from him. I don't know how she did, but she did, and it was a really nice surprise. So well done, Trina and Smithy, and lovely to meet you. And as I always say, Spud, and you do, and Rhino and Tess, Villa really is a family.
Yeah, 100% it is, man. And that was fantastic for his missus to set all that up. You know, you never know, Smithy, we might have an old beer on him in Birmingham in May, mate.
Now, that would be pretty amazing. I reckon it's going to be you and Rhino, and then Tess will get over there. Then I'll eventually get over there as well. So it'll be very, very good.
Yeah, my flight's booked for May, so I'm ready to rock.
Well, mate, we won't do a review so much because time's passed, but the disappointment of the Liverpool game, and we'll do a slight review, but not a full game review. Just your thoughts on the game and kind of what you saw went right and wrong.
To be honest, I had in our group chat there when it started to rain on test the last day to build up to the game. I predicted we'd lose 3-1 before the game kicked off. I just thought the signs were there the last few weeks. I thought we'd score, to be honest, because I think we have scores all over the pitch. So, but we haven't been defending well against pace, and I thought Liverpool's attack would be too much for us. And I hate to say I was proved right, but it kind of played out as I expected. But I didn't expect them to gift wrap it for them so much. Like we didn't turn up at all, really. From the first whistle, we were off it, and we made it very easy for Liverpool to implement their tactics. I was very surprised that we didn't play with three in the middle away at Anfield. I expected Matty Cash to come out of the side and Youri Tielemans to come in, because it was so evident away at Newcastle at St. James's Park that the three in the middle dominated our two, and Liverpool played with three in the middle again as well. And I just thought that maybe he would have started with Tielemans and try and match him up in the middle. Mm. We didn't do that. And then we gave Trent Alexander-Arnold the freedom of Anfield to pick his passes. And you just can't do that.
Mate, can I intercede for one moment? Because this is my absolute thought, the same as yours. I actually said it to Smithy and Tess a couple of days ago. That was the thing that absolutely... I don't absolutely get annoyed if you're getting beaten, right? But the one tactic I talked about in our previous pod was mark Alexander, you know, get Alexander Arnold, mark him, and he's their only avenue for passing at the moment. The fact that his first couple passes were beautiful, but he had a year to pass them, we didn't pick him up for the whole game. We just let him roam, and he killed us. And we were lucky the scoreline was what it was, because he was allowed to pick and choose his passes. I was really furious with that. Whether it was Emery not reacting or the players not responding, I just think we had to sacrifice a player and take him out of the game.
Well, I think what he was actually trying to do is, I think from what I gathered from the way we set up, what my opinion was, and I think Klopp just outsmarted him. I think the idea was to leave Trent free with the ball, and he wanted Trent to advance the ball. So we'd leave space in behind and we'd hit them on the counter. That's kind of what I thought he was at.
Yeah, yeah.
Trent didn't do any of the ball carrying that he usually does. He just stayed there and played balls over the top, which was obviously a tactic Liverpool had identified as Villa's high line. Like Nunes started, like, and even apart from his two goals against Newcastle, I expected him to start just solely because of his pace. Like him and Salah gave Dina and Torres an awful time, and time again. And
they did, mate. But look, once the tactic is outsmarted, this is what frustrated me in the second half. I thought, right, okay, well, you know, we're still a chance, or at least a chance to make it respectable. But the fact that we just decided for the whole game not to pick him up, I was just flabbergasted, to be honest.
Yeah, it didn't work out. And when you have the likes of Diaby and Ollie Watkins up top, like there's plenty of pace there to be closing anybody down. So I think that was the reasoning behind it. But then that should have been well changed. Now a lot of people are saying, "Oh, but Carlos got injured." But I thought we were in big trouble long before Carlos got injured. I don't think that had a massive reflection on anything that went wrong. And I think it's too easy for us to pinpoint that. Oh, it was only 1-0 when Carlos went down. But at that stage, I mean, look, don't get me wrong, we still had chances. And I'm not going to come down hard on them because, look, Liverpool can do that to anyone at Anfield. But I just thought that we created a lot of our own problems and we didn't take our chances. And I just think not enough players turned up. For me, I would probably say only Luiz and Konsa could probably walk away with their head held high. I see a lot of people were praising Diaby, but I thought Diaby came in and out of it personally, but he wasn't getting a lot of service. I'll give him that. But
yeah, I was going to say, I'm not going to hold him accountable because I agree with you. The service to him was non-existent. Yeah. And I think we've both pinpointed the fact that we didn't react. We didn't start, and then we didn't react.
It all started with that shambles of a tackle that Pau Torres made and gave away a silly corner to start. Now, Dominic Szoboszlai, or however you pronounce it, he hit that volley so sweetly, man. That was a gorgeous goal. I know a lot of people are saying it's offside. I think it would have been harsh to give it offside. We had something similar ourselves a couple of weeks ago against Burnley.
I don't disagree with that, and I didn't bring that up as a point when I was watching or anything, right? But I do think if we're going to be consistent, they need to make it very clear. I definitely think his vision was impaired. And if we're going to play it by the letter of the rule, that is offside. But they seem to change that interpretation from, you know, every few weeks.
Yeah, it seems to be different refs have different opinions on it, isn't it? And I can understand, like, to the letter of the law, why it's been given out. But as a football fan myself, take away my Villa hat for a minute. I don't want to see them go as ruled out. Unless they make a direct play for the ball themselves, I don't think it should be. Look, I mean, impairing a keeper's vision, I mean, it's, you know.
But I 100% agree with you. I think it's just, it's any sport. You just want consistency. Yeah. And the fact that sometimes those are called and sometimes are not. There was a game, and I can't remember who it was, where a player actually played at the ball but missed it, and it wasn't given offside.
That was the Fulham and Man City game. PJ Molo came out after and said, "Oh, it shouldn't have stood."
That one, that's an offside. That, because he has made a play, right? And that's going to distract the keeper. But if someone's not making a play, I agree with you. But by the letter of the law at the moment, that is offside. But hey, we weren't good enough. We've both agreed. From Emery to every player, almost, we just had an off night. And I think, as Villa fans, Spartan, I think you'll agree, not everyone, but I just think we need to temper the way we react to things. We're going to have some brilliant wins this year. We're going to have some brilliant losses. It's another year of us, you know, getting better as the season progresses.
Look, at the end of the day, like, because I don't want to dwell on it too much, because as I say, Liverpool's record at Anfield is absolutely phenomenal. Like, I wasn't expecting to go there to get anything, but I did expect a performance, you know. But what I will say is that if someone asked me at the start of the year, where do I think we're going to lose points? You would say the Etihad, Anfield, St. James's. So I'm not too worried about those losses personally. A little bit worried about the manner of the defeats, but I'm not too worried about the actual. They're not games that I would have expected us to get something personally. I thought maybe Newcastle away just because of the build-up, but Newcastle are going to blow a lot of teams away at St. James's. They're a very different team up there. But if we're going to be in a position where we're beating the teams around us and under us, but losing to the top four or five teams, that's still going to get you top eight.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, mate, let's have a look at a couple of the questions we got on Facebook. So thank you for putting the question up. So this is from Jonathan Northall. Question for the pod: how long before Martinez leaves because an offer to sell is too good to turn down? And sub question, what would the number be? I'll let you start on this one, mate.
Okay, so for me, I think as long as the club is progressing, Martinez stays with us. I think age, I mean, he's not a young man, but in keeper's terms, he's not an old guy either, you know. But what I will say is, I think if we keep going, say, if we win the conference this year and we go to the Europa League and, you know, he can see progress, I think he'll stay with us. If there's a year, maybe two seasons, where it looks like we're starting to stagnate, God forbid Emery was to leave, or, you know, just things went wrong in the club or whatever, and he was still that far a bit away, and a club came in with Champions League football, and he was a couple of years older, and I think he'd probably say to himself, right, I owe it to myself now. So I think it will depend on the club. If we keep progressing at the rate we are, I think he'll stay with us. If the offer comes in, I think keepers don't generally go for massive money, and there's a reason for that. They don't generate the same money in sales. Goalkeeper sales, jerseys, all that do not go for the same. The strikers sell more jerseys. So I would say it'd probably be a record fee, but you wouldn't get more than 100 million from. No way. I'd like this 170, 180 that I see people touting is, that's just us fans just plucking figures out of our head. There's so much more to that we've talked about before, where transfer fees are done in so much, like about merchandise, image rights, all that. And goalkeepers just do not sell as many jerseys as outfield players and stuff. That's just a reality of fact. They don't have the same commercial powers. And so I would say 100 million would be the price max, very max.
Right. I might reverse it and answer the first part, if that's cool. The second part. I think we would take one. If we were offered 120 million now, I think Villa would take it. So yeah. I'm kind of going a reverse way and saying, if the club was offered 120 million now, I think we would take it in a heartbeat. I think he's a brilliant keeper, but keepers, you've just said it, keepers in terms of sales, in terms of financial fair play and everything. If we got 120 million, I reckon our hierarchy would be saying, you know what? We can get a keeper for 30 or 40 million who's going to be maybe not just as good, but going to be pretty darn good and younger. And I think we would take 120 million. If we take that off the table and we have a season that's bad and so forth, this season goes downhill for whatever reason, a few more injuries, we just don't, something just goes wrong. I think the end of this season, he would be very strongly considering going. And I think he would then go for $70 to $80 million.
Yeah. I agree. I think just because of the spending at the club at the moment, I think a goalkeeper is something that they probably don't want to be focusing on right now. There's probably other areas they need to focus on. But I agree with you. I think if they'd have to seriously think about it if a big offer came in. For me, at the moment, shot stopping, he's up there as one of the best goalkeepers in the world. There's no question about that. I would love to know. I'd love to be a fly inside in Emery's thoughts. I'd love to know, because Emery's so big on the playing out from the back and stuff. And I don't think Martinez's distribution is brilliant. It's definitely improved, like, massively. But I'd love to know what Emery really thinks of his distribution, you know? Like, it's like when Pep Guardiola came in and got rid of Joe Hart from Man City and everyone couldn't believe it. Yeah. Suddenly this Ederson came in, like, and it just absolutely transformed the team. You look at what Ten Hag has done at United, and Onana isn't probably as good a shot stopper as De Gea, but boy, he can play the ball a lot better. So I would be interested to know if Emery's actually got in his head that he's eyeing up someone. Now, some Villa fans are going to be listening to this thinking, I'm absolutely crazy. But,
oh, they're going to think that both of us are blasphemous, mate.
But that is the reality. There's styles of play. But I think Martinez, his distribution has improved a lot, though. So I think
look, there's no doubt. Let's make it clear to listeners, and I don't try and placate listeners. We just give an opinion. There's no doubt. We all love Martinez, but there's also a reality, and I think we've put that reality argument out there. And I don't mean to be rude. Anyone who's plucking 170 or 180 million for any keeper in the world is absolutely insane.
Yeah.
To be a goal-scoring keeper.
It's not going to happen. You're just not going to get that kind of money for goalkeepers. It's not going to happen unless the Saudis done something ridiculous. But within football, I know the money's gone crazy, but the people that are still going for over 100 million and those kind of prices, they're selling crazy amounts of jerseys, you know?
I just want to say I appreciate the question's fantastic. It's a tough one to answer, and we just had to be honest about it
Yeah.
and put our sensible boys hat on. instead of, you know, we love what everything Emmy brings, but, you know, what you have to also face a bit of reality as well.
Well, I'll finish on that part question because I thought it was a great question, Jonathan. Unfortunately, when you're Aston Villa, because we're not Man City, we're not Barcelona, unfortunately, every one of our players has a price eventually. It's just whether someone's going to match that price. Every one of those players in that team can get to a point where there's money that we just couldn't turn down. That's just where we are as a club. It's unfortunate. But
at the moment.
Yeah, and that's where we are. And I think, as Paul said, 120 million would be very, very hard to turn down, especially after only paying 16 million from. But on the flip side, I don't see it happening. I think as long as we keep progressing, I think Martinez stays as a number one.
I don't want to pull splinters or anything, mate, but I actually think we paid 15 million, which is even more insane.
Yeah.
I mean, 15 or 16, it doesn't matter. It's still insane business. Chef Josh, Josh Donishy, a long-time listener and asked brilliant questions. He just said, "Hey, guys, looking forward to the pod. We appreciate it. Got the all clear from the hospital. Should be back to normal in 6 weeks. Thanks for the support." Josh, the whole Villa community is behind you, mate. We hope your recovery is good, and Spud will reiterate that. He's questioning for us. Do you see any point in Coutinho being loaned out and not sold? I know things have changed already, but do you see any point in Coutinho being loaned out and not sold with the squad we have?
Do you want me to go first or do you want to answer first?
Yeah, I might take this one first, if that's cool, mate. It's all about his weekly wages as well. And what we'd get in a sale is we didn't want anything to hold up getting that a fair bit of the chunk of the money off the books. And I think if we held out for a few million in potential sale, we're spending a few million on his wages a year as is reportedly. So I think whatever we had to do to get him out of the squad at the moment, unfortunately, is what they've done.
Yeah, I agree with that. For me, I see some people think, "Oh, it's crazy with all these injuries, all this stuff." But look, when Ramsey comes back in, that problem's gone. You know, like, and Ramsey's not too far away. Coutinho has not played enough football for Aston Villa to justify his wages. It's sad. Look, I was delighted when we signed him. I thought, look, this is it. This is big boy club stuff. You know what I mean? And it just hasn't worked out. It happens. Like, it's happened to every club. Everyone's had a big expensive. It's hard. I won't call him flop because it's a bit harsh on him because a lot of it has been injuries. But when you typically give out a loan, you have to pay a certain percentage of the player's wage yourself. So to get a club to take that big a wage for 100%, I think is an absolutely brilliant bit of business from Aston Villa. Now, I would imagine underneath the cards, there's probably an agreement between the two clubs, a gentleman's agreement, and Coutinho himself probably. If he manages to play a certain amount of games this year, that becomes a permanent transfer. That's what I would be guessing. Because, like, everyone just thinks, "Oh, it's Saudi Arabia. Why didn't we take 200 million off them?" But they're not stupid either. Like, they can see. I think Coutinho might even be injured at the moment. So, like,
yeah, he's still carrying an injury, mate.
Yeah, so to get a club to take him, pay his full wages, look, brilliant bit of business from the club, and it just hasn't worked out. I've no bitterness towards him. He never came to the club and just sat on his money, you know. I do generally put down to just bad luck with injuries.
He tried, and there was glimpses of just wow, but they were glimpses. And look, I think what you said, we were discussing it a few nights ago. The fact that his wages are being 100% paid is very rare on a loan, so it's a great bit of business for everyone, I think.
I think it's just one of those deals that suits everyone. Look, Coutinho is a very, very talented footballer, but his body just isn't allowing him to play Premier League football anymore.
It's the worst feeling, mate. Any athlete will say when your brain and heart wants to do it and your body just won't react, it is so frustrating. It's beyond frustrating, to be honest.
Yeah, and like, I mean, you see like Douglas Luiz's interview and stuff and just saying some of the stuff Coutinho does in training, you know, like the other players we couldn't dream of doing and stuff, but he just can't transmit that into the match for us. So like, he could go over there, hopefully less intense league, maybe the injuries won't be as bad. He'll get to enjoy his football again, you know. And I think it's just one thing. It's a great coup for the Saudi league as well. You know, Coutinho's a big name in world
football. Yeah.
So it's just one of those deals I think is good for all three parties.
It's one of those rare football deals where you can see a winning point of view for everyone, mate.
For everyone, yeah. And I do hope he goes over and gets to play a few games. I hope he doesn't go over and just have an injury-ravaged season for himself, you know.
Yep, agreed, mate, agreed. Smithy has asked, hey guys, as you're aware, I'm currently in Australia, but I return to the UK on the Sunday that we play Palace. My question is, after a 30-hour journey, do I go home to bed or go to the game? I'm going to let you answer that one, mate.
Oh, it's easy for me to say, mate, but I would be going to the game every chance I got, mate. So, after a 30-hour journey, should watch another 2 hours, mate.
You might as well be delirious at the game. I mean, come on. I mean, how many Villa games have you gone to delirious? I've gone to a few where I've barely known what's going on.
Absolutely. And it's home to Palace. I think it's a game that we should be looking to win. So go to the game, treat yourself, Smitty, and then you can go home and have a good night's sleep after.
Totally agree. So the consensus is in there. We'll put a poll up actually for you, Smithy, on that. I'll put that up tonight. Should Smithy, when he flies home from Australia, 30-hour flight, should he just go straight to the game? I think you're going to get 99, if not 100%, yes, go to the game. Or you might get a few who say, don't, can I have your ticket?
Absolutely, yeah.
So I'm just going to check Twitter. The last I looked, mate, I didn't think I saw any questions there. So it's a bit of a downtime for everyone at the moment, so... Just be a second.
I think there was a couple of questions on Twitter. I can't remember. I think there was.
Okay, let's go and have a walk. Okay, here we go. We do have some here, mate. So Paul Albert, thank you so much. He's really asking some good questions at the moment. With Villa playing the high line seemingly in every game now, do we feel comfortable with the pace of the defence against teams who are more than capable to test and exploit it? Take Salah as an example. So this is an extension of your commentary from the Liverpool game, mate. So I'll let you lead off there.
Yeah, I think that against without Mings, and I'm not just solely putting this on Mings' injury, there's obviously a lot of factors, you know. I think without Mings there's certain games away from home where I think we need to play 5 or 6 yards deeper. That's just my opinion. I think Newcastle and Liverpool have exploited that. Having said that, we're not going to play that many teams with that attacking speed that Newcastle and Liverpool have. You've got your Arsenal, your Man City. I would be surprised, even disappointed, if we were to go to the Etihad and play a high line. That high line, we will definitely play a high line. There's no question. That's just how we play. I personally don't see him changing it. This is his way, and this is what he believes in, how football should be played, and I respect that from him. But I don't think Liverpool aren't going to be the last team to show teams how to exploit it personally. So,
I do have the counter for that one as well, mate, that will stop people being able to try and exploit it as much. We've got Marino coming back potentially for this weekend's game, and he's going to make his opposition player be accountable as well, because he's got that beautiful overlapping that we saw last year. And I think with players like Marino holding his opponent accountable, we'll see less of that. So
yeah,
I think that a high line won't be as high. It'll still be a high line. I agree with you. But then we will also put teams under pressure that won't be able to necessarily, they'll open themselves up. And I think Marino is one of the perfect examples of the other teams are going to have to be wary of him. And yeah, don't underestimate what he's going to bring back to the team this week.
Oh, 100%, mate. And obviously it's going to take him a little bit of time to feel his way back in. But I spoke about this in the pod a while back, I think maybe the start of the season. And I was saying, like, people forget how important that left side was for us when towards the end of last season, when Mourinho and Ramsey were, like, a high percentage of our attacks getting down that left. I think the perfect example of how important Ramsey and Mourinho were is the Newcastle game at home, where we beat Newcastle 3-0. Yeah. And I think it was Jacob Murphy was playing right wing for them, and obviously Trippier was playing right back, and they're big threats for Newcastle. But they could not push on and play their own game because Moreno was so high and Ramsey was so high. And we've missed that. 100% we've missed that. And yeah. I think it's going to be a huge boost to getting those two players back, because we're missing our ball carrier in Ramsey as well. Like, Ramsey brings stuff that the other players don't. I'm not saying he's better than the other players, but there's certain aspects of his game that other players just don't have. Like that downhead running, you know?
Yes.
That late runs into the box, you know? He caused all kinds of problems, like. And Luiz has had to kind of, I won't say play Ramsey's role, but he's almost had to kind of add a little bit more to his game to try and make up for that, that ball Ramsey. So once he comes back, it's going to let Louise play his natural position as well. And I think as you hit the nail on the head, I think the importance of Ramsey and Moreno coming back in is going to be fantastic for the team, you know.
Well, Ian Allman asks a similar question. I think we've already answered this one, Ian, but I'll read it out for you. Can you see Emery playing a high line at the Emirates or the Etihad to continue team development, or do what the vocal fans want, be more pragmatic in those tougher games? I think what you said, Spud, and I agree, is we will be more pragmatic, that we'll still play the high line, but it'll be a few yards less or a few metres less. So still a high line, but not as high.
Yeah. You know what I'm interested in, Paul? I want to know, because it's become a problem. Not a problem, but it's slowly developing into a problem. It's just a thing that we've, other clubs have started to do. I think Man United, Erik ten Hag was the first to do it when we played Man United last year, where they had the late man running to beat our high line.
And
United tried it, I remember, and they eventually scored a goal. They had Bruno Fernandes running late. But then you notice the last day.
I just want to digress. He is definitely the most punchable guy in the EPL.
Yeah. He's just one of those dislike guys, isn't he? Like, oh, it's just, yeah. Good, great footballer, but he's one of those lads who you'd love to have on your team, but you'd hate him. You know?
Yeah.
Yeah, you hate him, because he is a great footballer, but he's just, oh, it's just a horrible man indeed.
And the fact he also gets royalties from Ice Age, it really frustrates me.
but then you looked at Liverpool the last day, and they had a late man running into the box to beat our high line as well. So it's something that we're going to have to try and adjust and figure out, because there's going to be a lot of teams trying that against us. So
I agree, but I think part of that solution, Spud, is what we didn't do to Alexander-Arnold. If a team has like De Bruyne is going to be that Alexander-Arnold for City, a bit higher up, of course.
Yeah.
But we've got to close down the ball player, and that puts... It helps our high line, because they can't spread the ball as nicely or neatly as they want. There was no pressure. We've got to put pressure on their primary ball player.
Absolutely. You got to the Emirates. Like, you cannot give Odegaard that time of the ball.
No.
Yeah, it's yeah, I agree. Again, as we've said many times though, Paul, like there's times it's gonna work and there's times not gonna, but he's not gonna change, you know. He might make it slightly deeper, but he believes in the high line, and when it works fantastic. So yeah, I do think we're gonna play a high line ahead in the Emirates.
I think we said this earlier, in the kind of season previews and so forth, is that we can't just lose faith in a very small window. We've played four games. And yes, there's been a couple of great games and a couple of ordinary games, but if we want this system to work, and in Emery we trust, everyone says, if you truly believe that, then you have to let this develop. We can't just abandon a game plan because we don't like a couple of results.
Yeah, 100% agreed. Yeah, because he obviously trusts, and like he knows Pau Torres has played this system inside out so many times, so like he's going to let it develop, because he's going to want either Carlos or Torres or Kanza and Torres to develop that high line together. So, yeah, and look, he always says you learn more from a loss. So, yeah, I don't think he's just going to throw it out the window because it got exposed twice. I think he believes too much in it, you know?
No, exactly right. I'm just trying to see if we had any other questions there. This is not a question. But this is down under Dickie. He said, I'd love to reminisce about one of my favourite ever games at Villa Park, when City were bottom, Villa were top, and we managed to come back from 1-1 to 2-1. Still one of my favourite ever games, despite all that's come since. Also, then when we beat Enter. So, this is not a Villa fan. This is Aguero down under Dickie. So, thank you for coming on to an Aston Villa podcast page and or Twitter feed and letting us know about one of your favourite wins. We do appreciate it. I don't know where that came from there, Spud.
Thanks for the contribution, mate. But yeah, if Villa had come back and won that game, mate, we might chat about it. I think Rhino had a question for us in his WhatsApp as well.
Yeah, he did, yes.
Yeah.
I'll go and see if I can find that one, mate. Oh, it's a good question, too. Here we go. Thoughts on the Tillemans comments earlier in the week. With the injuries we've got, and what we've seen so far this season, has your opinion changed on where we will finish? So two questions. Let you start on the first one. Thoughts on the Tillemans comments earlier in the week?
Oh, absolutely no issue with that. I think the couple of different articles I've read, they've all taken their own different translation on it. Of course he's unhappy not playing football, like, and I'd be a lot more worried if he was happy sitting on the bench. He didn't sign for Aston Villa to sit on the bench, so, but he wasn't. I don't think he was particularly moaning about it. The journalist asked him about it. Oh, is it going to trouble your international team? No, of course, your international players, you know, at Belgium, not playing at Villa. And he was like, well, I've spoke to the manager. The manager knows I came to play. At the moment, he's starting with the other two. But he said there's a succession of matches coming up and I'll see more game time. And then basically, I think all he's saying is, well, it's up to me to show what I can do then. But it just got blown out of context. You know, this is what happens in international weekends where journalists are bored and they just start ripping into players.
They start scratching for things to write.
Oh, it's a nothing story, of course. Like, who wants him to be? Do people want him to be happy to sit on the bench? I'd be a lot more concerned if he was. People give out about players that are happy to sit on a wage, but then the same people are also giving out about a player that said he wants to play.
I think sometimes people read the comments and don't actually watch a press conference as well. And when you watch and listen to it, I was really happy with what he said. No, I'm not happy to sit on the bench. I mean, Tielemans is my favourite signing of the whole lot. I know Diaby probably as well, but Tielemans, I think, is going to offer us so much. The fact that he's not happy sitting on the bench, the gaffer would know that as well. It's not going to be a surprise for anyone. I've got no qualms with it whatsoever.
And it's probably a case of his, because, like, there's no doubt. Look, Luiz has been brilliant, but Kamara has been a bit inconsistent already this season. But there's no doubt, I think, that at some point Emery's going to release Tielemans and let that frustration and go, right, show me what you can do, you know. So there might be a bit of man management in it too, you know, because we said this, like, it's hard for him to have dropped Luiz or Kamara. They were so good for him last year. But now it's getting to the point where the boys, like, Kamara isn't as consistent. So that's where you'd like to have a player of Tielemans' ability to get the other players looking over the shoulder. So he will get his chance, and it's up to him to perform. So I think it's a nothing story for me. I think it's been blown out of broad proportion, personally.
Totally agree, mate. The second part of Rhino's question, with the injuries we've got and what you've seen so far this season, has your opinion changed on where we will finish? I might answer this one because initially I said we'd finish 6th or 7th, and then a week or so ago I've said, nah, we're going to finish top 4. I'm going to revert to my 6th or 7th. I think it's going to be such a tight year. I think if we come 6th or 7th, win the conference and have a good cup run, I think it'll be a great season.
Yeah, I mean, when we talked about this a few weeks ago, I said 8th and win the conference would be a perfect season for us. I said I thought we would finish 6th. But I said I'd be very happy if we finished 8th and won the conference. And as I touched on a while ago, I don't think a loss at St James's Park or a loss at Anfield that changes that. We've blown Everton away, we've blown Burnley away. If you keep doing that, if you still keep beating the teams around you and the teams under you, then the top 8 is more than possible still. The top 4 probably was an unrealistic dream personally. I mean, the buzz around the club, we could be in contention for it. But for me, it doesn't change the fact we could be 6th, 8th. Well, I think we can still get there, no problem, yeah.
Well, Spud, what if we'd gone, I'm just going to put it a different way, what if we'd gone 1 win, 3 draws, right? And yes, we would have taken points of other teams, but we'd still be on 6 points. So, you know, I'd rather us go for it. And yes, we've had a couple of bad losses, but I'd still rather us go for it and enjoy our wins much more than we did over previous years.
Yeah, 100%. See, the thing is, like, it's easy to forget because recency bias is such a thing, and it's just, you automatically think, and naturally you think how bad we were at Anfield, but you forget how good we were against Everton and Burnley too. And we're going to be playing more Everton and Burnleys than we are going to be playing Liverpool's. Do you know? Yeah. Like, there's only a certain amount of teams in that league that can produce what Liverpool are producing. Newcastle have it in them, not even week on a weekly basis. Liverpool, Arsenal, Man City, and maybe United Old Trafford, because that's just a place we just can't win. But apart from that, you're going to be playing more Everton's, Burnley's, you know, and if we keep beating, and we're so impressive against them, there's no reason we can't be. It's very important that we go and beat Crystal Palace at home, and that becomes your recency bias then again, you know.
And I think we will, but we'll do a preview later in the week, depending on the crew being able to, which crew member will be able to attend. It's hard with life. So we won't preview that game at all. Before we go, mate, we might wrap this one up. It's been a really good pod. Do you have any, is there any other thoughts or comments you want to make before we finish off the pod, mate?
Yeah, just what did you make of the European draw?
Oh, I love it. I think it's very, very, I think we, you know, personally, I think without being silly, I think we should go through it undefeated.
That would be the hope. I think it's a nice draw. And it's a couple of nice ones for the fans. Interesting, though, because I see Legia Warsaw at the moment, they're having a bit of trouble because of the crowd trouble they had in Europe. So they're not even sure if they're going to, they might have to play that game behind closed doors, apparently.
Yes.
So that's why Villa haven't, that's why Villa haven't released information about the tickets.
Tickets, exactly. And I love watching. Had a bit of an argument with a couple English people recently about the most passionate football, supporters, and I said, look, I've been to England a lot of times. I've seen a lot of games, but I've been to South America and I've been to some of the European places. And Legia Warsaw, I watch a lot of stuff about them as well. Geez, that atmosphere would be absolutely scary as if you were traveling, I think.
Yeah, there's a really good Facebook page called Football Grounds and Stadium on Facebook. I've been on it. I really love it, man. There's some brilliant stuff in it. But there's a guy, he's an English guy on that group, and he's a really good fella to follow. His name is Alex Weber. So he's Alex Weber Photography. So basically, he's an English guy that lives in Poland. And he travels around to loads of different Polish games, from the Premier, like, to the First Division, to the Third Division. And it's so interesting, man. The atmospheres are absolutely crazy at some of the games, even in the Third Division in Poland.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so if you get a chance to have a look at his page, Alex Weber, it's really good. I'll tag you something along to him, but some of the stuff that pops up in it that he goes, I love reading up. Like, the atmosphere is electric over there. Like.
Nah, absolutely. Well, mate, I think the draw is a really good one for us. Look, whatever happens, happens. But it wasn't one I looked at and went, oh, no. I went, okay, cool. This is fun. I'm pretty happy with this.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's a group. I think everyone would be quite happy with it. There's not an awful amount of travel in it. And it's a group that we should be able to navigate.
Yeah, mate, I'm going to be a bit more confident. I think we'll be fine. But, mate, if there's nothing else, we will do a preview pod before the next game. This is the Aussie Villain podcast. How can we get you, Spud, on X or Twitter or whatever it's called these days?
Yeah, Spud Talks Football on Twitter. So look me up, give me a follow, and I'll give you a follow back.
Get me at Paul_football, and also, obviously, at Aussie Villains. We'll do our preview pod later in the week. And as always, up the Villa.